Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It's been more than 4 months since Louisville EMT Breonna Taylor was shot to death by Louisville police during a raid of her apartment. Since then, one of three police officers involved has been fired. The other two are on administrative leave. All of this amid dozens of protests and cries for arrests and prosecution of the officers involved. Tonight we ask, what is the status of the Breonna Taylor case and why does it seem to take so long? We have a lot to examine tonight, and we begin with USA Today national political correspondent Philip Bailey in Louisville, Kentucky. Also, former Maryland prosecutor Glenn Ivey. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Philip, Glenn, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate you coming in.
No problem, brother. Thanks for having me.
Let me start with you, Philip. What is the very latest on the issues surrounding this case? I understand there was a new public service announcement involving a typewriter and the like about Say Her Name. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Right. There's a new campaign ad that is hitting Louisville airwaves. Ultraviolet, left-wing political group, has purchased this advertisement, which is really just echoing the title of what we heard really from the Sandra Bland incident, Say Her Name, right? And talking about the Breonna Taylor case, which has really been injected into the bloodstream, not only here in Louisville, Kentucky, but across the country. You have everyone from LeBron James to Beyonce to local organizers shouting out this young woman's name. So at this point, you're seeing a very creative, very confrontational movement here in Louisville led unapologetically by black women, right? And it's being very persistent and very creative in some of its civil disobedience, whether taking over bridges, whether interrupting some of the mayor's press conferences. And now you're seeing it infusing itself into the political airwaves as well. So this movement has not waned or exhausted itself one bit, even as many are beginning to scratch their heads and demand to know what the status of the investigation is.
Glenn, can you talk to me from your perspective as a prosecutor why this seems to be taking so long, and why is it that even with the firing of one officer and administrative leave for the other two, that no arrests have been made?
Well, it's a little hard to know for sure because, you know, we're on the outside looking in. But, you know, there are a couple differences. Take from the George Floyd scenario where you had video that made it very clear what those officers had done and how far over the line they had gone. And I think that was tremendously helpful. By contrast, here you had officers come in. They didn't have body cameras. There were no recordings of any kind other than Mr. Walker, the boyfriend, calling 911 afterwards. But I think that makes it a little harder. And then you've got challenges, I think, from that. At that point, you're relying on individuals to give the information that's going to be the evidence that would lead to a prosecution. And frequently these come down to sometimes flipping an officer to see if you can get one of them to testify against the others. Mr. Walker's already made his statements. The Attorney General, Mr. Cameron, apparently either feels that's not enough or he wants to get additional information. But it may be that they think they need an additional piece before they could move forward with an arrest and a prosecution.
Having prosecuted police officers yourself, why is it so difficult to prosecute officers? And when we take a look at this place, obviously Breonna Taylor, as we well know, was in her own home. She was shot to death. She was with her boyfriend. None of them breaking the law at all. And so from at least one perspective, this seems like a cut and dry case. But why so difficult to prosecute police officers?
No, I think that's a great point. I mean, a couple of differences that make these cases harder than a lot of other ones. One is if it's a shooting. So, again, George Floyd, No split-second decision-making needed. You know, no officer's life was in danger, nothing like that, not even an allegation of it. Here, by contrast, what their defendants are, the well, they're not defendants yet, but the police officers are going to argue is, you know, we heard, a shot was fired at us, we returned fire, we were acting in self-defense and fear for our lives. Secondly, police get a break. Not only from prosecutors, but frequently from juries. They feel that these are difficult, dangerous situations. Officers sometimes are making life and death decisions in a split second. My personal view is that they get too much of a break on these kinds of cases. And there's some other factors here that I think make it more problematic, especially the use of the no-knock warrant in the middle of the night, when it didn't appear that this was the type of situation that merited that. They didn't think Breonna Taylor was, a hard or dangerous target. And they came in heavy. They came in with a battering ram. And there's a dispute about whether they announced themselves or not. But I think those are the types of circumstances that would support a prosecution.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville. What is its status? Why does it appear that it is taking so long for this case to move forward? Renee, calling from Suitland, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, good evening to everyone here. I'm just concerned that there's not enough outrage coming from the people who are supposed to have a voice, the people that are supposed to stand up for people who don't have a voice, whether it be the NAACP. And a lot of us out here that don't have a voice, we don't even know what to do. We don't know who to turn to, where to go. It's so hurtful. And I've cried many times with my daughters about it because they ask so many questions that I can't answer. And they wonder why, everybody's kind of just not really outraged about it. It's not enough being done to make sure that these police officers are prosecuted. There's a million excuses. There's a million reasons why. The politics of it is just disgusting. And at the end of the day, an innocent person was killed in their home. You know, it just seems like the people here that are in these decision-making positions to do something that we expect for them to do, they're just not very intelligent.
Renee, thank you so much for your phone call. I would respectfully disagree with that. And perhaps Mr. Bailey could talk a little bit more about that.
Right.
But I think there has been volumes of outrage from...
Yeah, I think that...
Please go right ahead.
That's right. Look, Harold, the level of anger and outrage, at least here in Louisville, has been unprecedented, right? again, I think what we're seeing here is an unprecedented movement, a consistent one. But at the end of the day, how much can an individual or even mass protest achieve when it's ultimately up to one individual? That would be Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, the first African-American Attorney General in Kentucky's history, when it's in his court or in his office, right? So at a certain point, I think the caller is absolutely right. There is this feeling of sort of dismissiveness of, if I can't be safe in my own home, in many ways, Breonna Taylor's killing is a million times worse than George Floyd's, because it's an institutional killing. It's a question of the investigation itself, of the judge. Why did the judge sign this no-knock warrant? Did that judge scrutinize it enough? The fact that her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, was prosecuted after trying to defend himself and Ms. Taylor. It's from top to bottom a real questioning of our institutions here and how we have created this very cruel and beautiful Negro eating machine. Its only real purpose appears to be to devour African Americans in the name or the pursuit of one drug dealer or two drug dealers or gentrification or whatever the rationale for this particular investigation was for police to be so adamant about it. But she is right. There is certainly a feeling of desperation and hopelessness. And I can say that you have a lot of people here in Louisville who are skeptical about what will happen. The reason maybe people are taking so long is they're trying to wait folks out. But in this particular movement, there is no waiting people out. They have been engaged and will continue to be engaged until a decision is made.
Glenn, quickly, final comment from you. Do you think this is taking a long time? From your professional experience, the shooting happened March 13th. This is now July 29th, 4.5 months. Is that emotional thinking, or has it really just taken a long time?
It's hard for me to know without kind of having a better feel for what's going on internally there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these can take a very long time. And, you know, the federal investigation is frequently take a year more when they take place. On the other hand, you had things move very, very quickly in Minnesota, in part because of the evidence that was the video evidence that was there. I think the key point, though, is keeping the pressure on. The public needs to keep pushing for this. I think people need to keep an eye on that Senate race. Mitch McConnell's got a Senate race coming up. This became a hot issue in the Democratic primary there. And apparently Mr. Cameron has connections to Senator McConnell. So, you know, letting it I think there should be a very strong push to make it happen as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. but certainly before the election in November.
Glenn Ivey, former Maryland prosecutor, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
I want to go now to Chanel Helm. She is co-founder of Black Lives Matter Louisville. Chanel, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Talk to me about what's been happening recently with Black Lives Matter Louisville. We have seen some really muscular protests over the past several months, and you know, some of them you know, have made national news, and they have been kind of eye popping, and we have been concerned for, you know, certainly the protesters who have been hurt. Talk to me a little bit about what's happening.
Yeah, so ever since that last week of August, I think everybody, you know, everywhere has been fueled, and finally folks here in Louisville have been ready to really get in some work against, you know, the Louisville Metro Police, who are, you know, I've been trying to come away from the word corrupt because this is the business that they do, abusive, terroristic, and we've been having that happen during our protest as well. I think we're getting ready to hit 60 days. And so we've been trying to make sure that anything that we throw is more strategic, especially along the lines of how many folks have still been waiting on information from LMPD around their children's death. The same way we're watching it take forever to get information around Breonna Taylor's case. And actually, this has been pretty fast, given the situation. So we're still headstrong on making the mayor and the chief of police fire the officers. And we want to target their pensions next because, as someone stated in a prayer for us, like, it's not fair that, you know, you get to commit a crime and then you get to eat from the murdered folks that you've killed. And that's just the way we see it. We're also really steadfast on building a community civilian review board. We think that's necessary given the obstructions that have taken place in any of these investigations, as well as, you know, other things that have happened at LMPD, a lot of mistrust around the community, a lot of sexual abuse. And so that's been really steadfast on protesters in our collective, Louisville Organizing Collective, along with a lot of other organizers and organizations. So we've really been pushing that. It's been really hard working with outside groups because I think, you know, we want to get around viral sensations and really amplify them and really show what we have during the protest. But it's the organizing piece that we really need all hands on deck. And while it sounds boring sometimes, what we need people to know is we've got to be investigating who our city council people are, how they're connected to city influencers. And that's something that we're uncovering as well. A lot of city influencers playing in a lot of these different dishes. A lot of those being developers, of course, especially here in Louisville. And I'm glad that that's something that they uncovered with the Breonna Taylor case. We've been fighting some very rogue housing crisis here, it's particularly in a neighborhood which that house was found in, around Breonna Taylor's situation, where they just, you know, displaced and racially banished an entire community out of a project, and now they're utilizing a choice grant to rebuild that that area. So it's been interesting watching the wallets flow throughout the city. Besides that, you know, people still show up at Injustice Park. We still have folks that are out every night disrupting different, you know, white neighborhoods. And then folks on our end really making that connection around downtown businesses really being disturbed mm-hmm. by folks still protesting.
I need to take a break, but I do want to drill down a little bit more about one of the things, or several of the things, but specifically something that you mentioned about gentrification, specifically Vision Russell, for those people who are listening and not really familiar with some of the details. We're going to get into that and some of the theories surrounding this Breonna Taylor incident. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Oh, by the way, we do have a phone call on the line. We're going to get to that next. So please do not hang up. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Don't forget, you can hear this and every discussion via podcast on WHUR.com, posted every night before 9 p.m. And don't forget, the original Quiet Storm with John Mons continues on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. We are continuing our conversation about the status of the Breonna Taylor case. Why does it seem to take so long? My guests are USA Today national political correspondent Philip Bailey. He's still with us from Louisville, Kentucky. Also from Louisville, Chanel Helm, co-founder of Black Lives Matter Louisville. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Barbara, calling from Germantown. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just wanted to add that maybe it's taken so long because they have no intentions of indicting these two officers. And if you indict those two officers, they need to open up because this goes deeper than just those two officers. The fact that they lied about the warrant, the fact that they surrounded themselves with several lies about the shooting itself gives prudence to what actually did happen and why it happened. So this case goes a little deeper and far deeper than just those two officers being indicted for her murder.
Barbara, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your input. Philip, talk to me about Vision Russell and what this reportedly has to do with the Breonna Taylor case. Watching from the outside, there have been several reports, television, print, and otherwise, about how these two are connected.
Right. I mean, one of the things while I was still at the Courier that we uncovered that I think was sort of shocking to a lot, but maybe not people who do the actual work, was that one of the motivations to end this Breonna Taylor case in this investigation, this drug investigation that she got wrapped up into, was that you had the police department here in Louisville and the mayor's economic development agency both targeting this house, 2424 Elliott Avenue, which was part of the smaller project within Vision Russell, which is this effort to gentrify the historically black Russell neighborhood, including raising a housing project by the name of Beecher Terrace. Right? We've seen this story before. We come in, we promise you, oh, it's going to be mixed income, people can move back in. We take a lot of poor black people and just sort of usher them out. This happened in the eastern part of downtown Louisville that's been redubbed Nulu, the sort of lily white gentrified area now in east downtown where we saw a recent protest. So what we found is that the accusation, at least by Breonna Taylor's lawyers, is that the police department started this new unit called the Place-Based Investigations, which really took the lead in this investigation into this drug house along 2424 Elliott Avenue, looking at Jamarcus Glover, right? So that's why you see, at least that's the theory of the family lawyers for Breonna Taylor's family, why you see this effort of cutting corners and this effort to really crack down on this one individual house and this low-level drug dealer. So you see this effort of where the police department says, oh, we have information on this male, that supposedly, you know, and even though the U.S. mail inspector says I never got any conversation or had any conversation with LMPD. Breonna Taylor, Harold, is only mentioned twice in search in the investigation file. There's one time where a car that belongs to her is seen outside of Jamarcus Glover's home, and the other time is when Jamarcus Glover is seen at her apartment, leaving her apartment with a piece of mail. And that's it. There's no connection between her or any accusation that she ever touched any drugs, was ever seen with any drugs, that even the piece of mail itself had any drugs in it. It's just the officer, the observing officer Joshua James' experience and observation that he says in the warrant. And that's where you see her address get wrapped up into this, where this no-knock warrant is obtained that Judge Mary Shaw signed on to. So, again, this is my point from earlier, why Breonna Taylor's case is far worse than George Floyd's. It's not a patrolman and an African-American having a confrontation split-second decision. This is an institutional matter. This is a legal lynching of sorts, in that from economic development, the police department, the courthouse, the judges, all the way to the prosecutors continuing to prosecute Kenneth Walker, even after the police don't tell the grand jury in that case against Kenneth Walker that he thought it was some random person trying to enter their home, not police. That was never shared with the grand jury. That same officer later interviewed another officer involved in the shooting where they're feeding the officers answers from the internal affairs unit, from the officers who shot Breonna Taylor. So from top to bottom, this is a question of Louisville's system. And I mentioned earlier, many people are saying, oh, this is corrupt. This shows we need reforms. For many people, whether it's from gentrification to the shooting of Breonna Taylor, the killing of Breonna Taylor, to the prosecution of Kenneth Walker, this is how the system is supposed to work. It's working quite well, in fact.
So now, this sounds bigger than reform. This sounds to me as if there needs to be a wholesale house cleaning as it relates to the Louisville Police Department. It's my understanding that the former chief resigned over during the course of this, and it's also been extremely difficult to get any information out.
So that's business as usual. I know that's kind of frustrating to hear, and we hear so many things taking place in other places. I do want to lift up that we're a part of the South. This is Kentucky. And you're watching what they typically do. I know people are frustrated that it's taken this long, but actually, like I said, this is really short compared to the other police murders that they have done. And some people, again, they haven't even gotten one piece of information. I think what is outstanding is people really think that the police chief is representative of the police force. And in some ways, yes, but also we know, and this is the battle that we have. So to tackle the police force, we have to tackle the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police. And they set in date a historic good old boy system with making sure that their bargaining agreement is the only way to go. And you know, there's people to support that. And so that's where we're at, where we can't get the officers fired exactly. We've been trying to maintain work on that. And it's clear, like, people are not hearing us when we say it. But definitely take a look wherever you are. But here in Louisville, it's been a battle, and we're ready to keep going with this battle as well, to make sure that when officers do some really grotesque stuff, even if they don't do grotesque stuff, just whatever is not following the SOP, which is also an issue too. That's the standard operating procedures for officers in whatever issue that they're dealing. Their standard operating procedures that doesn't happen. You know, just like anybody else, you lose your job. Police officers are not abstaining from losing their job because they don't do their job correctly. And what we're seeing in the gross misbehavior is exactly what the system was set up to do. So we're not looking at anything that isn't working. We're looking at it working perfectly for them, and that's who it's working for. As far as what we're looking around gentrification, the spatial deconcentration tactic that they love to use is racial banishment. We have a high incarceration rate for that neighborhood. So calling something revitalization, or we're going to, like, support, you know, getting funds back into people's hands, and this ploy over home ownership is all a crock, really. Like, it's really a joke. And we've been exposing that. Research grassroots research center here called Root Causes Research Center. They have linked some other initiatives that have taken place. There's a company that has put in electronic smoke detectors in vacant and abandoned houses. These are the houses that they claim they can't get a hold of the owners of to even move the properties in a way to get people in them, you know, lighten up the neighborhood. But you got to put these electronic devices in these homes to catch fires based on sound. So none of it makes sense. We also are looking at ways that opportunity zones have ventured all across Louisville, and in particular blocks, and certain initiatives that are taking place in Russell. All of them are displacing folks, and they're utilizing this spatial deconcentration population as a population that they need to utilize to get funding from, too. So, again, just as we saw black bodies back in 400 years ago be used as property values, here again you have them get played around who gets housing, who doesn't get housing, but also how much that housing in with black bodies being the root of that. And in this case, Breonna Taylor paid with her life.
Philip, from your perspective, Where is this case as far as prosecutions are concerned? Certainly Glenn Ivey gave us, you know, kind of an overarching perspective, but you are, you know, boots on the ground journalist, having been with the Courier Journal in Louisville, but also now with USA Today. Why do you think this is taking so long?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, I think when COVID-19, I mean, this happened really at the first week when everyone started being told to shelter in place when COVID-19 started. You know, Breonna Taylor is murdered or shot and killed on March 13th. Mm-hmm. Everyone is sort of already, you know, sheltered in place. The ironic thing is that the people who really wanted this to be a story at first was the FOP. They were so upset with Kenneth Walker being put on house arrest by a black judge in the city who they hate, Judge Odom Stevens, that they made it a political issue and went to all the TV stations and made an issue out of it, not realizing that if people just did a little bit more digging, they'd find out the unusual circumstances of why Kenneth Walker was being put on home incarceration for shooting a police officer, right? So that's, I think that's number one, is that COVID-19 sort of interrupted the entire city's consciousness around this particular case. I think number two is that, look, there has been some conflict between the Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, and Mayor Greg Fisher's office. Cameron's office saying that, look, we didn't get the full investigation. We don't have any body cam footage. There was some pieces of it that we didn't get as quickly as possible, as quickly as we wanted. And I also think that for Daniel Cameron, this is a sticky situation. He's someone who ran heavily on, you know, being supported by law enforcement. You know, there were three things that made Daniel Cameron's campaign a pillar in this community last year. Was one, his mentorship and relationship to Mitch McConnell. Two, his outright full-throated support for Donald Trump. And three was his relationship to law enforcement. So at this point, the case is with him. There are many who believe that Officer Brent Hankinson, the one who's been fired already by LMPD, will be charged with something, whether that's wanton endangerment or murder. You already see department sources leaking information about Officer Hankinson, even one of the officers who's also involved in the shooting, Officer Mattingly, Sergeant Mattingly. He throws Hankinson under the bus in his interview, saying in his interview with Internal Affairs, they had to tell Hankinson to calm down before they even entered Breonna Taylor's apartment, that he pointed his gun at a neighbor who came outside to ask what they were doing. And he's the one who allegedly shot into the back of the apartment without actually seeing who he's shooting at, right? But there is a question of whether or not the other two officers will be charged. I know a source I spoke to today with the Attorney General's office says they don't plan to announce any charges this week or next. Another source who is investigating this case, who has seen the investigative file, has told me that, look, basically the way you have to do this is you're going to have to charge all three and none of them at all. Because if you charge Hankinson and you don't charge Officer Cosgrove and Sergeant Mattingly, then Hankinson can say, my bullets didn't kill Breonna Taylor, their bullets did. So you got to get all of them or none. There are many different legal holes and hurdles to jump here, but I can tell you this, that the steam and the level of pressure and anger in this city is such I don't know if there is anything short of wholesale revolutionary change to not just the Louisville Police Department, Harold, but how Louisville operates as a city, and how these cities, because these cities are run by Democrats, right, who African-Americans vote for by and large, who black women who are leading this movement vote for by and large. Your chief constituency, your most loyal constituency, Democratic Party, whether at the national, state, or local level, are black women. They're the ones leading this movement and saying they're completely dissatisfied, and this is how slow the system's moving for them. If this can't happen, if you can't get change, if you can't squeeze a drop of change out of this stone of this system, then I don't know what short of full-scale violent eruption you'll see in Louisville. I don't know if there is any satisfactory answer, and I don't know if Breonna Taylor can be brought full justice, considering from top to bottom how this was very much an institutional killing, a very sloppy case, a bad case, one in which, you know, now I will give credit to Keturah Herron and ACLU, lobbyists for ACLU, who passed legislation, who helped pass legislation at the Metro Council to block no-knock warrants in the city of Louisville, right? That's a small piece, though. I don't know if, Harold, you can bring Breonna Taylor full justice. That's how bad the situation is here in Louisville.
One of the things that I've always been so curious about in this particular case is why was there no body cam footage? Glenn Ivey said earlier that that was one of the issues that was problematic for this. George Floyd, there were bystanders who had smartphone video with Rashard Brooks in Atlanta. There was there was body cam footage from the police officers. There was also some security footage. Mm-hmm. Why was there no body cam? I mean, this was not, this wasn't a split second thing. This was a raid. It was planned.
But that's the point. I mean, not to interrupt, but back in 2000, Cheryl can correct me if I'm wrong on the year, but when
I got you.
When Sergeant Mutchler was still the head of FOP, I remember interviewing him when body cams were first introduced as an idea. And FOP's resistance to body cam was for a number of things. Everything from as petty as saying, we don't want our officers getting reprimanded for cursing or running stop signs on body cam footage. But they were insistent on that anybody involved in a SWAT operation not be wearing body cams, right? And the idea that was, or the argument behind that was, it will show off the tactical responses that LMPD does during these SWAT operations. And now, that was something that I think that was what ultimately got Chief Conrad fired, because the governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, had been told by the mayor's office and the LMPD here in Louisville, the police department here in Louisville, we're going to show you this body cam footage. And then it was an hour, and then 2 hours. And 3 hours later, the governor was told, we don't have that body camera footage. Ultimately, we don't have it because the FOP and the police department always argued that we shouldn't be putting body cameras on people doing SWAT, no-knock warrants and knockdowns in the first place. And you never saw, again, the Democratic establishment here in Louisville. Louisville's a city where you have a Democratic mayor, your Metro Council is controlled from top to bottom by Democrats, your county attorney is a Democrat, your chief prosecutor is a Democrat. There's no big, bad, mean Republican other than maybe now Daniel Cameron being inserted in this case to blame here. The reason you don't have body cam footage is because the police union didn't want that, and there wasn't this practice of upholding or holding police accountable for when they didn't turn them on. That's the bottom line.
So many questions about this.
I also want to lift
up. Yeah, please, go ahead.
One of the main reasons is you use a comparison. What he said was on point, and that's the part that we're trying to fight. But the other officers that you see in all those other situations around the nation, those are patrol officers. What we have in this situation is a narcotics undercover unit that's a street team. And so Louisville still has heavy street teams, apparently some that we didn't even know of, especially this place-based investigation unit that we were even told by the mayor did not exist, but he had full knowledge of that once it was uncovered. So we're looking at, and this goes way back, I think, what was that, 2002 or 2004, when Michael Newby died by a police officer shot in his back as well. which also set off a round of uprising in Louisville. Another piece of street team, undercover officers, out here, murdering people, not on body cameras or anything. And that was part of the distraction, the FOP making sure that that folks, you know, don't see what it is that they do. And this is business as usual, right? Making sure that you're making money from the war on drugs with black people. And that's essentially what we have here. Just the other day, they tried to do a large distraction around 14 folks being arrested, press conference and everything. In the middle of this, making everybody's the hype go up, thinking this is going to be the announcement, and lo and behold, we have this, this entire investigation around a drug ring. And that's pretty common across Kentucky. So we know who is able to move what. And that's something that I'm sure that they don't want anybody to see, which is the same reason why a sheriff and some state troopers don't wear body cameras.
You know, one of the other troubling things that came out recently is the information about immediately following the shooting that no medical attention was administered to Breonna Taylor for some 20 minutes. How did that come out, Philip, and what kind of explanation, if any, has been given for that?
Well, remember, earlier I mentioned how we've created this sort of beautiful, harsh, cruel sort of Negro eating machine. Mm-hmm. And again, police go into Breonna Taylor's home. They hit it with the battering ram. There's a dispute between police and Kenneth Walker over whether or not they announced themselves or who hurt who. They shoot. One of the officers is wounded in the femoral artery. They're attending to him. They retreat. So Breonna Taylor is still in the home, because we always wondered, how could Kenneth Walker make these phone calls if they're in the middle of this gunfight? Well, it's because police retreat. He's still in the apartment with her, dying next to her, next to him, making these phone calls. Mm-hmm. This might be the one where I think it's the most reasonable, actually, of all these different stories that have come out. Right? Police are not about to try to re-enter the home after Kenneth Walker is shooting at them and wounds one of their officers. But it again shows that, and I think this is where even a slogan in the world, where the defund police movement is really speaking to, which is, why is it that police are always the first response to someone with a mental issue or domestic violence issue? I've talked to a number of former African-American narcotics officers who used to work for LMPD. And what they would tell you is that, look, and usually in cases like this, where you have a woman who you think might know the drug dealer or the Nino Brown person in the case, you don't bust her door in. You approach her in the grocery store. You might go to her job. You know, Breonna Taylor was an ER technician at the time. You go to her and say, hey, Keisha, Latrell, whatever your name is, you know this person. We know they do us some dirt. Help us out. We don't want to kick your door in. Let's make this easy on yourself. Tell us what you know about this person. That's how they usually approach it. So, again, the fundamental question that has not been answered that I asked at a panel discussion months ago, which is, why was a no-knock warrant needed for Breonna Taylor if she's a soft target, if the only thing your warrant is for is to obtain mail? No drugs are found. Mm-hmm. If the only reason, again, Harold, this is why I got to go back to the original warrant. The only way Breonna Taylor is mentioned is that apparently Jamarcus Glover is an ex-boyfriend who she was still cool with. He's over her apartment, and he comes outside of her apartment carrying a piece of mail. Not pounds of marijuana, not pounds of heroin or cocaine, a piece of mail. How many of us on this phone have someone we may or may not know what they're involved in who's carrying a piece of mail out of our home? Does that mean we get our door kicked in? So no one can explain with LMPD why the most extraordinary, the most ruthless type of force was used in this middle-class working woman's home, when other narcotics officers are telling me, oh, no, someone like that, we approach them privately and go, hey, here's what we got. We'll show you some pictures. Tell us what we need to know. Please help us out. We don't want to have to do anything to you, X, Y, Z. So her being lying there bleeding to death or dying in her apartment is certainly one that I know will shock and upset people even further. But to me, that is, I hate to say, because I don't want to sound cruel, but that is a small piece of what this is. The question is, why were we at her apartment in the first place, and why did we need to kick in a woman's door when the only involvement she has in this case is mail? Right? Mail.
Chanel, talk to me about moving forward. What is the plan from your perspective for Black Lives Matter Louisville? There has been a lot of smoke and flames as it relates to protests that has ignited a national movement from NBA players and other celebrities, activists. They are, just to tell you, they're talking about it here on Black Lives Matter Plaza, just a block or two from the White House. And so do not think that you or the protesters in Louisville are alone. There are people that are with you all over this country and in Washington in spirit. So what is the next move for your organization there?
Oh, yes. Those are our homies up there, BLM DC. And, you know, it's no borders for this movement work. We're everywhere with everybody, even outside of this country, talking to the homies in Brazil, in the islands, in South Africa. We all are steadfast. I've been joking about the way that they've been trying to quell the protest, you know, calling it magical Negro season, because they're willing to throw any amount of money or anything at anyone. And we've been trying to make clear, like, for at least for us, the people who've been funding us and been coming out and feeding folks and taking care of folks, they closed a popular grocery store. Hell, one of the only grocery stores in West Louisville, a quarter of the city, we had to create our own funding to, like, feed our people. We did that at the beginning of coronavirus and during the uprising, the height of the uprising. So we building. Regardless if they're going to come and give us whatever it is that we want, we're still going to stay low and build. And we've been doing that. It's been looking great, too. I know a lot of times people think it's quiet, but folks are really reaching in deep, trying to figure out, you know, like, what are the next steps? You know, if they're not going to fire them, how do we get it done? A lot of research is taking place. But the lovely thing is all the new faces who are on the ground willing to keep this up, but also those that are fighting back based on their own situations, and doing this not only just for Breonna. You know, we've had a number of police deaths in the last year, in the last few years. So it's been really trying to, like, get the families to know that they can fight back and push for justice. And if justice doesn't come tomorrow, then it's going to come, and we'll hopefully we'll be there. The other things is, hold on one second, I'm so sorry.
Get together. Get them together.
This is the real world. and that is just another form of working from home, even if you are working for justice.
And watching people's kids.
Yeah, absolutely. without a doubt. this has been such a heavy conversation. I'm glad we've just had a moment of levity.
It is a heavy conversation, those kids actually put on a protest. They were like, hell, we want people to know we out here too. So they got together and they put on a little march out the hood and made their way all the way to downtown. And they had this narrative together, you know, like, they were just like, we just need a bullhorn. I was like, okay. And they did it. So we're seeing it. We're seeing the change around whether protest is a good thing or not actually take place. And that conversation has really been penetrating, even into the demands we're setting down for the developers, the businesses that have taken over, even with city council. You know, they call us and some elected state officials to see what their next move is. So a lot of it is really, it's really working. And I see us, you know, not ending anytime soon, actually.
Well, it's good to also know that you're in the process of training future voters, those young ones who are asking for just a bullhorn right now. The real bullhorn is going to be at the polls. I will let you, Philip, have a quick last word as we, you know, continue to look at this case and the investigation. Your final thoughts?
Breonna Taylor was a 26-year-old black woman who was an ER technician, who was literally on the front lines of a global pandemic trying to save people's lives. Who knows if she would have been a head of a nursing department, a doctor herself, who knows whose life she hadn't saved. And I think that's the other thing, man, is that when you kill someone like that, that young, you kill their future, right? Like, and I know that what it's done here is it's radicalized a lot of people in Louisville. But again, as I said earlier, this movement is being led unapologetically by black women. But I think we also need to look in the mirror and look at how many African-Americans, we sign on to these tough-on-crime policies. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus were supportive of the 1994 crime bill. Mm-hmm. There are just as many of us who say when there's a drug house on the corner, clean it up, do whatever you got to do, Mr. Policeman or Mr. Mayor or whoever else. And remember, when you ask for that, you know, it's like unleashing a pit bull in the middle of the street. It's one thing to say, oh, let the hounds out, let the pit bulls deal with them. But when that pit bull grabs a five-year-old child by the neck and is tossing it around, you can't really say to that pit bull, well, put the baby down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, we have signed on to a system. And I think even though I think the slogan, again, I'm going to criticize it, is not the best slogan in the world.
Hurry up. Really, I'm out of time. Real quick.
Well, I'll just simply say that we need to have a larger conversation about changing policing in our communities.
I want to thank Chanel Helm, Philip Bailey, and, of course, Glenn Ivey for talking to us about this really important issue. And just for all of you, be safe as you pursue what we're dealing with right now. That is The Daily Drum on Wednesday, July 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.